Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Kind of, you know, Bismack Biyombo, Joel Anthony, Kwame Brown is a horror story. All those guys, but those guys can't shoot jumpers. They don't dribble. They don't have fluid spin moves. They don't do any of the other stuff that at times in these like 8-second bursts that make Wiseman so appealing. Like those guys never did any of that. So the thought is like he clearly has skill and touch and some feel with his hands, but he which makes me think a lot of the drops seem to be brain processing, overthinking on the court. He's in traffic and an aversion to contact, which I do think is a problem. A lot of times his drops are in traffic. He's not a good contested rebound guy right now. So I think he needs to get more physical and get a more physical mindset. But I think once the game slows down, he's going to be able to catch the ball. Now, they should probably also just spend part of the summer doing whatever hands drills they think help an NBA center. You know, people have joked about like the Jerry Rice drills, and, you know, throwing bricks, all that stuff. Some of that, but I think mostly they just need to get the game to slow down for him, because I think he'll be able to catch when he's just not overthinking everything.
You just referred to it that they rank 21st in the league in offense. Are they just easy to defend as a team, or is this an anomaly that will take care of itself before the end of the season?
Well, what's interesting is like young teams have a really hard time defending them because they're not used. Because, you know, you look at when the Cavaliers come into Chase Turner, when the Hornets did the other day and gave up, you know, 45 dunks in that game or whatever it was. Young teams aren't used to the off-ball movement. Suddenly it's like, oh, no, another back cut and a dunk. But when they play veteran teams like they did the last couple of nights, Lakers, Portland, teams who have players who have played against the Warrior style, they know the actions. They know the back cuts. They know what Steph Curry is going to do off the ball. Don't let that slip go. If you cut off some of that, well, the Warriors don't have supplementary shooting, particularly when you have a starting lineup that has Draymond and Kevon Looney. I mean, Kevon Looney doesn't want to shoot, but he was forced into like 8 shots last night, including like 2 mid-rangers, because Portland just funneled the ball to him. And we've also, I've been on the show talking about Draymond Green's offensive struggles all season. He can't hit a jumper anymore. He's at times afraid to shoot. And when you have that many offensive net negatives in an era where all over the league, I mean, most teams are trying out 3 to 4 guys out there that shoot 40% or above from 3. And, like, their offensive rating is 21st. It's 109, which, you know, 6 seasons ago would have been good. It would have been top half of the league. It might have, like, broken the top 10. Now, if you're a 109 rating and you don't have enough shooters, you're bottom 10 offense, even if you have Steph Curry out there. And that's the problem, particularly against veteran defenses.
Yeah, and really that brings us back to needing to get Wiseman involved in that starting lineup somehow. But I want to dig in on the Jordan Poole thing just a little bit. Obviously, he's going to play tonight because you're without a bunch of people. But if he's not, I mean, why didn't he not take Brad Wanamaker's minutes last night? I guess is really what I'm asking. Because if he's not up here to try to take Brad Wanamaker's job, why not let him keep thriving in the G League?
Well, he was up here for tonight. Clearly, we've learned that now that we know this Steph Curry, Draymond Green wasn't. They didn't decide this Steph Curry, Draymond Green rest night. Today I found out about it today and reported it, but it's been a plan, and it was a plan when they decided to they were initially going to bring Poole and Mannion back for the second half, and I do think there was going to be some rotation tweaks going into the second half, but knowing that Curry and Draymond were going to miss this Phoenix game, they brought up Poole and Mania for tonight. Now, going into the second half, I think it's clear you need to figure out what Jordan Poole is. You've already guaranteed his contract next season. He is a 21-year-old who was top five in the G League in scoring. Brad Wanamaker's 31, not on a contract next year. I mean, theoretically, you could bring him back, but he is what he is with his limitations. Poole, we don't know what he is yet, and the Warriors need to know if they need to move off him in the offseason because they don't believe he can be, you know, a secondary, you know, second-unit playmaker, or maybe they discover he can be, and he can be, you know, Steph Curry's backup or, you know, a combo guard backup next season. But we won't know until we've seen 25 games of them rolling the ball out and kind of letting him explore what he can be.
Our friend Anthony Slater here on 95.7 The Game. Is Kelly Oubre playing tonight, do you think?
Questionable tag as of now, which surprises me. I would think, considering, you know, no Steph, no Draymond, you'd think they'd want to roll him out, give him a rest night, but questionable on the trip, and I guess theoretically could play.
I hope so, because he better damn well be really hurt if he doesn't go tonight against that former team. He did not look good against the first time around against Phoenix. A little redemption maybe tonight. Warriors need all hands on deck to get through this one. Anthony Slater, thank you so much, man. Appreciate your time.
All right, thanks for having me.
There he is, Anthony Slater, the best at covering this team. Really is, man. Every time he has that "What Happened Last Night" article, I'm reading it, and I notice that every single Warriors fan is talking about it the next day, too. So good stuff with Anthony Slater. We'll have more on Warriors and the Suns game in a little over an hour from now. Ryan McDonough is going to be joining us. He's got experience with that franchise. He is all over the NBA's media right now. We're going to have a Thinking Man's Thursday before it's all said and done. You've all been warned. When we come on back, who needs rules for a baseball season? Apparently not Major League Baseball. We're going to say a nice thank you to someone who deserves it. And we might even ask, what is the worst franchise right now in all of pro sports? So stick around. Much more coming up. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. And remember, Warriors are back at it against Phoenix tonight. It is it's going to be a tough one. No Dre, no Steph. Good luck. JD and Covey getting you set with Warriors live at 5:30. Tip-off is at 7 o'clock tonight right here on 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, welcome, welcome. It's really good to have you here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, thanks again to Anthony Slater for stopping on by, putting a finer point on an awful lot of Warriors discussion, which we've been deep into since we sat down to start talking to each other today at 2 o'clock this afternoon. We've been in full-on Warriors mode, NBA mode, this entire time. Just breaking away from that for a moment, we'll, of course, get back into all of it with them playing a interesting one in Phoenix tonight, to say the least. There are a few other things that we need to get in here today, guys. One of them is that on April 1st, on April Fool's Day, we have opening day for Major League Baseball. I just did the math on that. That is officially 28 days from right now, exactly 4 weeks from today, March 4th, here in the year of our Lord, 2021. We haven't decided on a rule book yet, which is a little weird, considering there's a huge difference between the National League and American League rule book because of a little something we like to call the DH. I mean, we're not going to have one in the National League again this year. I mean, if they are, how could they spring that now? And, Ray, I know it's a working theory of yours that Rob Manfred might actually hate the sport of baseball. I think I'm coming around to supporting that theory because this feels like a really weird way to walk into a baseball season.
Well, then I'll refer you to the Minnesota Twins today, which ran out of players in their game against Tampa, dressed an advanced scout and made him a pinch runner. So we have innovations everywhere because there are no rules.
You got bullpen catchers taking generous leads off a second. That's nuts. Okay.
But
that's...
it's not that Rob Manfred hates baseball. It's that he cares about other stuff more. And in terms of, you know, whether the National League has a universal, whether there's a universal DH or not, you know, how many innings they play, how they do doubleheaders, all of it is basically a game of chicken with the union. And the union is pushing back on stuff. So they're basically going, they're kind of poking the cage to see what will get the lion up and growling. And the fact that they've backed off of this after last year, they thought this is a great idea. You know, we're really going to push this. And then they put, and then they, you know, then the union snapped back, and now it looks like they're going to drop it again, and it'll turn into part of a long and painful negotiation for the next CBA, which will probably result in a lockout, because what Rob Manfred is really there to do is to find out how best to crush the union, and the union is there basically to find out how much they can crush back.
I mean, it's frustrating because that is what it comes down to at the end of the day. You're not fooling anyone, baseball. We know all this nonsense with the rule book and the pushing and pulling on the universal DH. Like, you're just throwing out stuff you know won't fly, so later in negotiations you can say, well, we already gave you that back.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's all about, I mean, baseball fans basically have been badly served for a while now. And one of the things that has badly served them more than anything else is an idea that Manfred is championing, no doubt at the behest of owners, is that why isn't our sport more like the others? Most particularly basketball and hockey and soccer, which do not go 3 hours a game. I mean, they've had this jihad against time of game for a while, when the problem has been pace of game. You know, the game is slow, but just to say, well, then we'll just lop off innings and change nothing else, is an indication that they really are rummaging through a very limited medicine cabinet for old Band-Aids, because they don't really understand why baseball isn't resonating the way it should. And they want the solutions that they've seen work in other sports, even though baseball is unlike any other sport. So it's...
And
it's
basically,
this,
quickly, yeah, they're unwilling to go to the doctor for an actual prescription.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, well, what do you mean we have to cut off time between half innings? That's when we make our money. You know, well, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't know how many baseball fans like a 15-inning game. But I know there are some, you know, and I think the people who don't like a 15-inning game can always get out of their chair and walk away. You know, it's the idea that everything has to be fit into a convenient box, you know, across the board. You have to have a DH in all the things, and you have to have 7-inning doubleheaders, even though up until last year, nobody asked for them. You know, it's this one-size-fits-all approach to a game that is essentially delightful, but is trying to be, you know, governed from the outside by people who largely aren't baseball people.
Right.
There are fixes to be had here, but they don't ever ask them, well, what are the fixes we can do? How can we make pace better? You know, and they don't do it because they don't want to give up any control, because their real angle is not fixing the game. It's fixing the business.
But you can't have one without the other, which seems to be something that they don't understand. And here's the deal. Like, if baseball is tinkering with its rule book in the name of, we're just trying to get in as many games as possible during a pandemic, like, I got it. I didn't like the DH. We did weeks on that. And I don't think that was pandemic-based, really. But what we did have was that runner on second base for extra innings. It added an element of instant interest to extra innings, which I thought was different enough to actually work on some level. Trying to get in two games in a single day and go into 7-inning games, again, I'm throwing up in my mouth every time I hear that, just a little, but I get it. It's a pandemic. We have to condense things to get everything in. If they were doing that still because of COVID-19, I would grant them as wide a road as they needed to travel down just to get through this damn year. But like you're saying, Matt and Ray, it's about the next negotiation. None of this is being done in the name of safety or prudence or how can we solve a hard to solve problem. It now is without a doubt all the chess pieces being arranged on the board for the next CBA, not to get through a season correctly or swiftly or safely.
We see it all. They it's so funny. There was a big sign stealing scandal. I am stealing every single one of baseball signs. I can see every single pitch is coming. This is a changeup coming. Oh, sit back on it, everybody. Spit on it. Like, it is easy to see what they're doing. And the fact that they're going to try to wrap it in a bow of COVID concern is going to be a little hard to do, especially since so many stories in baseball today are, we're going to see fans. We're going to even see fans this summer in California.
Well, at least that's the plan. I mean, Texas has been gung-ho about fans and basically saying, okay, you don't need a mask anymore. And yet Texas just had a spike because of the ice storms. So this thing isn't done yet. You know, I mean, when Gavin Newsom said he's hoping that there'll be fans for opening day, he sort of said it like, I want to hedge my bets here. Because they're not sure this is over yet. And it's not just about vaccine distribution. It's about another variant that they've found that's starting to rear its ugly head. So it's they've tried to basically force situations that they're not empowered to force. And because, you know, they worship a schedule more than they worship logic, they want to have people in buildings. And, you know, it just I don't know how many times they have to get kicked in the face before they notice half their teeth are gone, but they're going to keep trying.
I've never heard that expression before, but I like it.
Where are all my teeth? I've swallowed them. So, look, baseball, we're on to you. Please get it right. We want to, absolutely want to love you. You make it hard to do. We're going to need a rule book, and we're going to need one in 4 weeks. So there's that. The only other element of COVID discussion at all anyone is going to hear on today's show is this, and it's the nicest element of COVID that I could possibly put on the show today. And it's really a tip of the cap and a round of applause to Aaron Rodgers, who is doing something for all of Northern California, specifically Butte County, that has to resonate. I mean, this is fantastic. With very little fanfare, Aaron Rodgers has given $1 million of his own money spread out to 80 small businesses in his hometown of Chico and throughout Butte County. The goal is to cover 3 months' rent for small businesses, many of them restaurants. We've been talking about how concerned we are about our friends in the restaurant business since the dawn of the pandemic and how they have been hit among the most hard of all industries. And I got to tell you, you know, I understand that saying Barstool is a controversial thing for many reasons and all this. Dave Portnoy, whether you like him or not, he is the president of Barstool Sports, and he went out of his way to start a Barstool Fund, which Aaron Rodgers said directly inspired him to do this for his hometown. And remember, Aaron Rodgers is officially double-dipping with hometown generosity now. Only 3 years ago, he was donating $1 million to help with the campfires, and he racked up another $3 million worth of fans and people's donations. So he's already in for $4 million, $1 million of his own and three because he could raise it just a few years ago. And he's back with $1 million out of his own pocket going directly into the bank accounts of small businesses. And it was inspired by the Barstool Fund, which, again, no matter what you think of Barstool, you have to admire what they've done through that fund. And it's putting money in people's hands that really, really need it. A round of applause and a hear that has nothing to do with sports, all to do with humanity. Good job, Aaron Rodgers. Way to get it done for Northern California.
Yeah, he's always, you know, sort of done that. I mean, there was a period in his career where he didn't really, you know, get involved with that. But he really did step up. He really has stepped up. And I think it probably started with the Paradise Fire because, you know, that's a community that basically was, you know, destroyed. And I think he was there for that. So, you know, it's well in character. And, yeah, applause all the way. But it's sort of a sustained applause because he's been doing this for a couple of years now.
Yeah, he's just a guy who throughout his career has made a habit of quietly doing really nice and often important things. And, you know, I tend to think that's the best way an athlete can go about it.
Yeah. And, you know, we I don't necessarily, but I think a lot of people hold against Aaron Rodgers the friction that he has with his own family. And people should know that friction and family, it's a funny thing to stand accusing of being wrong because you ain't in that family. You have no idea what happened. But a lot of people see that and they're like, oh, there must be something wrong there. He doesn't get along with his brother, his parent. What is going on? Who knows? Who knows? It's wrong to hold a negative light up to this guy in any way. He seems to be pretty decent. A hell of a quarterback, that's for sure. And he's engaged. He just got engaged to some actress.
Shailene Woodley.
Yeah. What was she in? All those
Descendants, among other things.
Yeah, all that.
She was in those, yeah.
Yeah, all those weird science fiction movies that I'm not.
She was in Big Little Lies, the HBO show.
Oh, I did watch that. Yeah, I was forced to watch that because I'm married. I didn't really like. I didn't like it very much. But okay, yeah, she was the girl on the beach.
Never miss a chance to sleep in the garage.
Yeah, the younger of the group of women.
Right. Yeah. Okay. With the kid in the apartment. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There we go. See, I watched it. I can prove it. There you go.
We're all proud.
Thank you very much. What we're not proud of at all are the worst franchises in American sports, and it feels like we've had a little bit of a reshuffling of the deck recently, have we not? Because the old standards, the flag bearers that are the worst in sports, have sort of, again, moved around a little bit. Like in the NFL, it was real simple. All you ever had to do was say Browns, Lions, Jets, and you filled out the list perfectly. Those were the three most clownish, laughable franchises you could find in sports, much less the NFL. And look, the Browns have played themselves off of that platform. The Jets made a hire that is closer to credibility than they've had in a long time, but still huge hill to climb for them, but they're at least pointed in the right direction, they hope. The Lions were still sort of giggling because it feels like they got a meathead for a coach. But they're hitting the reset button. We'll see what the line. And we would like to congratulate the Texans coming up late out of nowhere. Used to be considered a pretty salient, sort of respectable NFL franchise for an expansion team, even though they've been along. If they really do trade Deshaun Watson, I think we have a new title holder in the NFL as clearly not just most dysfunctional, but congratulations, you are now really flirting with the ability to be the worst NFL franchise. Does it feel like we're going in that direction for the NFL?
I think they probably are right now. I think they've already achieved it because it's not just about wins and losses. It's really about sort of how you operate, not only your business, but your place in the community. Like right now, I would say that the Cleveland Indians are worse because of their handling of the Mickey Callaway thing. I think there are, you know, the Minnesota Timberwolves are incredibly bad because they're operated poorly and don't respect, you know, their fans or former players. Every year some team is going to lose, and you know, but you know, I think we're taking the worst franchise and we're sort of expanding the definition to include people who just do scummy stuff that has nothing to do with whether they can, you know, roll a ball out on time or, you know, run a practice or, you know, win a game. I think the standard is different now.
Right, the evolution.
Which is why the Washington football team remains profoundly cringeworthy, even though they won 7 games last year.
Right. This is way beyond winning or losing percentage now, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and credibility is part of it, too, and that's where I think the Texans are really, you know, outpacing the pack of bad franchises. Just the level of football credibility that has escaped that building in the last 5 years is pretty staggering.
And if Deshaun leaves,
it's over. There's nothing left. There's no credibility whatsoever.
It's going to take a full lunar cycle to reestablish them at all, no doubt. You know, looking around
base. I will say this, though.
Yes.
If you want to expand your geography a bit, Barcelona, which has Lionel Messi and has made tons of money for years and years and years, just had 3 of its top 4 executives arrested for corruption.
Oh, wow.
So we've got action everywhere. The German team Schalke 04 just fired its fourth coach in 23 games. We've got action everywhere.
When you say three of the top four executives, is that like, you know, the GM, or are you talking like club president? Club, like who are they?
Club president. Club president is. They don't really have a GM. They have like different kinds of technical directors. But one of the things they're accused of, and you'll like this, is they had a social media department whose responsibilities included putting out information, basically, savaging current members of their team, including Lionel Messi, because he was critical of the president. I mean, essentially Charlie Johnson putting out like a tweet saying, Buster Posey sucks as a human being.
It feels a little odd in terms of who you're going after. But yeah, that's great. And normally, I like all of my European scandals to be like bunga bunga parties or something like that. I hope this isn't just a financial thing that'll be boring. But okay, that tweeting thing is, you know, welcome to social media. Gives just enough opportunity for a lot of people to shoot themselves in the foot, for sure. Good to see it happening on other continents. Soccer a mess. Again, you asked for it, right? Getting back to, you know, the United States of America. And usual suspects, again, falling out of contention for worst among us. We go to the New York Knicks. I mean, this is why the NBA landscape looks a little different right now. We're not proud of the Knicks. We're not applauding the Knicks. But they are no longer far and away the most hopeless, least significant, pretending to matter franchise in the NBA. Not even close anymore. The Knicks are halfway decent. At least it's the zenith of their post-Carmelo Anthony era happening pretty much right now. You got Minnesota, certainly contending for least functioning, most dysfunctional possibly, NBA franchise. They want to be sold. They just fired their coach. Doesn't seem like a lot of guys really fit well together at all. Orlando, a little bit of a mess. Houston is making its way to the medal stand after so many years pretending, or at least creating the illusion, that they were one of the best in the league. It's amazing what Tillman Fertitta and goodbye Daryl Morey will do to change that team's perspective. Houston, maybe replacing the New York Knicks on the franchise of medal stands of bad NBA franchises. I didn't see that coming. I really didn't.
I think you underestimate James Dolan.
You're saying he can still screw this up?
I think you're going to be saying hold my beer about the Knicks pretty soon. Because something will happen. It will involve him. And the other thing is, the Knicks have risen, but a lot of the rest of that conference has fallen. You know, you can be fifth one day and 12th the next because everybody is about two games below 500. They still have only four teams that are above 500, and that's out of 15. So I'd kind of hold back on the Knicks a little bit yet. They're better than they have been, but the rest of the conference is worse. And the other thing is, no team gets more credit more quickly than a New York team that's been bad and rises to sub-mediocre.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to tell me that there is an overzealous media looking to sell you a Knicks story. I get it. I'm telling you my own two eyes. Tom Thibodeau teams are tougher than even James Dolan can come on in and ruin with a stupid song or whatever. So, location, location, location. I'm not going to accuse them of being in the East. Yeah. We all knew that.
That's right. The East, New York teams being overloved. Ray's right about all of that. But I got to say, James Dolan's errors have largely been hiring the wrong people and not being involved enough. So if we think he may have hired at least some of the right people with, you know, Leon Rose and Worldwide West and Tom Thibodeau, chances are he probably will stay out of the way because he's busy touring with, JD and the Straight Shot.
You couldn't pay me, right? Couldn't pay me. And I love live music. Couldn't pay me to go to that. Look, I'll say this, and I'm not. When you start expecting something good out of Jamie Dolan, you're asking for it. I haven't heard a peep from him all year. Have not heard from him at all, which means maybe he got a note from somebody. Shut up. Get out of the way. Let basketball happen. It's happening. I'll give him credit for that. You look around baseball.
One ex-player getting banned from the arena away from being back to being him.
Well, luckily, they're not letting that many people in, so the odds go down of that happening again. The Marlins always feel to be quickly approaching. Well, they don't matter at all, but what do you know? They muscle themselves into the playoffs. They actually win a round last year. Let's not talk over who. And they hired Kim Ng, which certainly got them a round of applause. The Mets' honeymoon with their new owner didn't last long, but they're not relegated to don't matter anymore. Houston might be the most disliked, but they still win way too much to be in the conversation of worst teams in baseball. I'm not sure baseball's got a definitive worst franchise. Like, we know that the Pirates and the Orioles win the least, but neither is like an up-and-down, unmitigated cultural embarrassment, which brings us back to Ray's point about the Cleveland Indians, who are embarrassing for a few reasons, and we'll get into those reasons, and we'll even tell you that we found an embarrassing hockey franchise. So we'll tell you who that is, too. And when we come
only
on back...
One?
Yeah, we're just going to be generous and quick about that conversation because no one really even cares. Ryan McDonough, though, joins us at 4:30 this afternoon. Looking forward to that conversation. We're going to get back into the Warriors and the NBA and the Suns tonight with him. So stick around. An awful lot happening here on 95.7 The Game. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, we are brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. Our Exergen temperature check right now tells us it's sunny and 64 degrees up in Napa.
Demon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
And just glide.
What am I listening to, Lucas? What is going on?
It's JD and the Straight Shot, baby.
Oh, turn it off. Oh, God.
No wonder why the Knicks haven't signed a free agent of consequence in how many years. Oh, that's bad.
This is Glide for anybody wondering. Looking on Spotify, I'm sure you can find it.
This is not the Glide I recognize.
No, me neither.
I'm not going to judge the music. I mean, I am mentally, but it's not. Pick whatever you want. But that's a good pull from the producer.
It really is.
To go out and say, you know what? At the risk of causing people to drive into trees, I'm going to do this.
I mean, I'll be totally honest. He paid that entire crowd to applaud that moment in the song. But
that's,
no,
right.
Hey, he's got more musical talent than I do. I'll give him that much. There's no doubt about that. I can't sit around and play an instrument and entertain my 19-month-old, much less anyone who, you know.
That's why you got cable.
Yeah, you're right. But that's,
I don't know. I'll take my chances.
Seriously, you can pay to see Jim's, you can see James Dolan or me in concert. Like, isn't sitting here and talking sports with me 4 hours a day enough for you? You'd actually go to the concert?
I'd much rather see this radio show live than JD and the Straight Shot live.
So that was Glide.
I'm just gonna assume that Jillian walks through the house kicking the knobs off radios just to make sure she's not even tempted to expose Jack to the horrors of this.
So I actually asked her the other day, I'm like, have you ever been driving around in the car with the boy and like put on the show just to see if he recognized my voice on the radio? And she was like, no. no, not at all. No, I have. We've not done that. Not even thought about it. Don't care. No. So thanks, honey. Thanks for listening. Really appreciate it.
If she
that.
Had done that, I would have called Child Protective Services.
My, you know, the radio in the house is tuned to 95.7 for personal reasons. And my son has, in fact, turned it on, only to become very confused and not necessarily in a happy way.
Maybe that's how he started.
I presume that's because of Bonte.
The rapid blinking that we've been seeing. Maybe that's like his reaction to just too much radio.
That's true. It could be.
That's not rapid blinking. That's a disturbed nervous twitch.
So we were talking about the worst franchises in sports, and someone says, hey, you know, the Giants aren't far away. No, yeah, they are. The Giants are not. They're not going to have a good season. But they're not going to have an embarrassing season because I don't think anyone's really expecting that much out of them. And they might maybe just happen to find themselves interesting. We'll see. I mean, they've been
halfway interesting the last couple of years, and they're not even the worst team in their division. So, you know, they're
right.
They're not where they were, but they're not in this conversation.
Right, the Rockies. I mean, if you had to pick a team from their division,
the last 2 years.
Right, but it's far and away the Rockies who are the worst team.
Oh yeah, especially after this offseason.
Oh, I mean, it's like they're not even trying out there, which they're not.
You want to know how much they're not trying? They haven't even talked to Trevor Story, their last remaining good player, about a contract extension, and he's probably the second best shortstop in the game.
Yeah, and they just lost the best third baseman in the game, not named Matt Chapman. So good luck with that. Seriously, good luck with that, Colorado.
It's not hard not to be a terrible franchise. All you have to do is try. And even if you suck at it, at least you're in there rolling dice. You know, it's the person who sort of trips over the chair walking away from the table that gets this notice. Or the person who spends all their time in court because they treat their employees like garbage.
The Rockies have the second longest odds in all of Major League Baseball to make the playoffs. The final four in terms of the four worst teams according to Vegas and their playoff chances right now. The Detroit Tigers, the Baltimore Orioles, the Colorado Rockies, and God bless them, the Pittsburgh Pirates are still there. Ray, I did mention that we will even include hockey in this conversation. I don't know, or I don't even, I couldn't even go about identifying like an on ice embarrassment. That's how little attention I pay to the league outside of a few Sharks games and Blackhawks games here and there. I am not a great hockey observer. So I don't know who's an on ice embarrassment, but I do know that the Arizona Coyotes are staking out their own little corner in the we're embarrassing for other reasons world that I don't know if another NHL team is going to be able to meet them in that corner and throw down the gloves and have a fight. This thing is, it looks like Arizona in a rout.
Well, it's not a rout, but they are clearly, they're clearly first at the quarter pole. They've always been undercapitalized. They've never been able to figure out where to put their arena. I don't know that. I think they've won two playoff series since they moved from Winnipeg. They never draw.
They got a new owner.
Their
who
current
wants
ownership,
to kiss
which
the
does
ring.
Have, yeah, and their new ownership, which does have money, has got levels of dysfunction that, frankly, caused Katie Strang of The Athletic to be sicked on him. And that is a sign that you're not doing things well. But I would put the Ottawa Senators in that group because their entire province hates that owner, Eugene Melnyk. I think even though they're having a great year this year, you could point to the Toronto Maple Leafs, which have made money hand over fist and haven't won a Stanley Cup since 1967. You know, there are plenty, but the right now the clubhouse leader after the first round of the lack of Masters is Arizona.
Congratulations to the Yotes. Nice job.
They have a great uniform though.
Yeah,
it's
their
first title, I believe, right?
And they've never won a title.
They were
That's
also
what I'm saying. This is their first title.
They were also
I see what you're saying.
Weren't they also the team that drafted the kid who had like he bullied
a disabled classmate?
Yeah.
And bullied the disabled classmate in part because of the classmate's race.
Yeah. This has been a rough.
They drafted him in the fourth round despite knowing this, and then renounced his rights after people found out about it.
Yum.
This is why we are 100% behind Ozzie Weisblatt. There's a draft
That's
pick
right.
that you can count on. How's Ozzie Weisblatt playing this year? Is he playing this year?
Well, he hasn't played with the big club, which was expected. It's going to be a couple of years before you see Oz.
Is he with Barracuda? Is that where he is? See what I did there?
I'm actually not. I don't know that he's with the Barracuda yet. I think he's still. I don't believe he is.
Heart.
Yeah, he's not ready for that.
Look it up, kids. Heart.
Boy, have we been dating ourselves a lot lately.
Yeah. So look at it this way. Tomorrow, Kolsky's Corner. You want to go full on Hart, Nancy Wilson, you go right ahead. I make a suggestion, though? A tribute to Bunny Wailer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was in my head.
Originally Livingston.
R.I.P.
There you go. There you go. Let me just quickly, a minute or two early, because I know that Ryan McDonough is going to be joining us in just a little bit. A minute or two early. Let me welcome you to the 4 o'clock hour.
You should probably be ashamed to have to admit this, but you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. By the way, just because you asked for the clarification, Ozzie Weisblatt is still playing for the Prince Albert Raiders of the Western Hockey League.
Nice. I heard they got a ring.
Well, it's good to know that our sad, twisted minds go to the same place.
Yeah.
I was trying to let that go, but apparently not.
No. Grab the brass ring, kids.
Where do you think you are, Ray?
Yeah. We paint exclusively in the color of gutter here on 95.7 The Game. So, look, the Golden State Warriors, in their last few, like, handful of road losses, it's just been brutal. You know, I don't know if it's the old saying. I don't know if we actually got a saying, but you can ask just about anybody in sports, and losses feel like they linger more than victory gets remembered. And even though the Warriors are 5-5 in their last 10, it's starting to feel more like 3-7, 2-8. Like, it just feels that way. And that's because the losses in just the last 2 weeks have been of gut punch fashion. They really have been. Like, last night was an entire evening of missed opportunity. The game felt like it got decided on a tough bang bang call, but there was an awful lot to not like about that game in Portland. They blew a 13-point lead to an Orlando team that had really nothing going for them but Terrence Ross feeling it. Then you got Charlotte and the Draymond debacle at the end of that game. And again, these things linger more than the taste of victory coming out of the game against the Knicks felt like a good thing. And we were saying that they got to get a little bit of momentum going into the All-Star break. And even if they don't need to, from a dauber up, dauber down standpoint, it'd be a good idea to. Well, obviously they feel differently. And as Anthony Slater said earlier, the decision was not made today to send Steph and Draymond back to the Bay and not have them play in Arizona tonight. But that decision has indeed been made. So tonight's probably got big fat loss written all over it, unless, you know, and let me tell you, here's the shot that the Warriors got tonight. Remember that one time Bobby Boucher showed up at halftime and the Mud Dogs won the Bourbon Bowl? Like that's what the Warriors are hoping for tonight. A little bit of a miracle against a Phoenix Suns team that is really good all of a sudden. And so to talk about that, to talk about the NBA at large, we're very happy to welcome back Ryan McDonough, joining us from radio.com. Our NBA insider, Ryan McDonough. Insider calls are brought to you by BetQL. Get access to data and insights that sportsbooks don't want you to use. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app or BetQL.com today. Ryan McDonough, thanks for coming on back here to Damon Ratto and Kolsky. How you doing?
I'm doing great, gentlemen. Always great to be on with you guys.
Yeah, thank you very much for joining us. The Warriors kind of had a rock fight up in Portland last night, and it didn't go well. There was a few sequences down the stretch. Obviously, Draymond gets involved in a bang-bang block charge situation, and the Warriors lose one. Felt like it got away from them, and so get it right tonight. In Phoenix, felt like the plan, but no Curry, no Draymond, even on the trip. So this one feels like it's going to be extra hard for the Warriors tonight because the Suns all of a sudden feel like they're among the NBA's best.
Yeah, the Suns have the second best record in the entire league. They played very well on both ends of the court. They're one of only two teams, the Utah Jazz being the other, that are in the top 10 in offensive and defensive efficiency. So the Warriors are facing a buzzsaw. That's one of the toughest back-to-backs in the league as well, guys. I've done that trip when I was the GM of the Phoenix Suns in particular. Going from Portland to Phoenix on a back-to-back is not a whole lot of fun. It's a late arrival. So I'm not surprised that Bob Myers and Steve Kerr decided to hold Steph Curry and Draymond Green out of the game tonight. You're seeing a lot of that around the league. That is a trend, giving some of the stars, especially the guys who will be participating in All-Star Weekend, the last game off before the All-Star break.
Yeah, I mean, Zion Williamson has a mysterious toe injury that's keeping it out of their game tonight. So, yeah. The other thing that happened from Phoenix the other night was when Devin Booker got tossed in the last minute of their game against the – or not in the, in the third quarter of their game against the Lakers. And afterward, the head coach, Monty Williams, in his presser, sort of didn't necessarily back Booker up and said, hey, he's our team leader. We need him out there. Normally, coaches will just defend their players, at least publicly. A, were you surprised by that? And B, how did that hit your ears?
Yeah, good question. In fact, we saw it again last night with a somewhat controversial late ejection in Philadelphia, a great game between the Utah Jazz and the 76ers, went to overtime. Donovan Mitchell got ejected in that one. He was upset with a video of him walking back to the tunnel. You know, he was throwing towels and arm sleeves and all that kind of stuff. So it's been a recent trend around the league that's been controversial, you know, star players getting thrown out of the game for not a whole lot. I didn't read too much into it in Phoenix. They have a good thing going right now with the Suns. Booker came out after the game and said, look, you know, we're not a one-man team. He was disappointed in getting thrown out. So I think that just kind of sticks with their mentality. They've had all year next man up. They're a pretty deep team. And, they were able to beat the Lakers without Booker. What I would say is, it's especially for Lakers fans, I'm sure would like to hear this, that was not the full Lakers squad. Obviously, no Anthony Davis, and they had Kyle Kuzma and Marc Gasol out as well. But I didn't read too much into it from a Suns Devin Booker perspective. Maybe that's because the team has been rolling lately, and it seems like the chemistry and vibe in the locker room is pretty good as well.
So as far as this Suns team goes in general, it feels to me like they're now entering this kind of Utah Jazz territory where they have played at this level for long enough that is it time to start thinking of them as one of the favorites and a real championship contender?
Well, I mean, the numbers would tell you that they are. I mentioned the offensive and defensive rating, the point differential plus six a game. That's very good. That's right up there with the Clippers and Lakers, and trailing only the Utah Jazz, really, in the Western Conference. So I think they have a chance, guys. I mean, Chris Paul is really, he's done what he's done everywhere he's been. You know, especially when he arrives, the team wins a lot more games and plays a lot better than it did prior to his arrival. That's been a pattern with Chris. You saw it in Houston, and then just last year you saw it in Oklahoma City. But then the bench has played very well also with guys like Dario Saric and Cameron Payne in that second unit. Mikal Bridges has taken a big step as one of the better defensive wings in the league. So they have a lot of talent and depth. We'll see how the young guys hold up when they do get into the playoffs. But it looks like the Phoenix Suns are a surefire playoff team in the Western Conference, which would break a 10-year playoff drought for the franchise.
Ryan McDonough, I think one of the last times we had you on to talk, it was around the draft, and we were talking about the prospects, and it was an unheralded, unloved draft. Do you feel differently about it now that it looks like LaMelo Ball has established himself as a future star in this league, and we're still holding out an awful lot of hope that James Wiseman, who's only 19 years old, is going to join him in that conversation? Tyrese Haliburton can absolutely play. Anthony Edwards, what he's unrefined, he certainly got the hops. And-